I'm Max Kaiser. This is On the Edge. Time to speak with Dr. Paul Craig Roberts. Dr. Roberts is the former Assistant Treasury Secretary in the Reagan administration. He was also an editor at the Wall Street Journal and is a prolific writer and journalist. You can find his work at Gerald Celente's Trends Journal, as well as other places on the internet. Dr. Paul Craig Roberts, welcome back to On the Edge.
Hello, Max.
Okay. Now, Dr. Roberts, the new year, 2012, is this the year that finally sees the global economy recover from the banking crime wave?
No, I don't think there'll be any recovery, Max.
Well, let's get into that a little bit more detailed. In 2011 and 2010, going back to 2007, with the beginning of the global financial crisis as we know it, ushered in a period of deleveraging, a period of deflation, a period of credit evaporation. And in this soup of banking crisis, we have discovered what Warren Buffett once said: when the tide goes out, you see who's not wearing a bathing suit. These banks apparently don't have any equity on their balance sheet. How are they going to recover? Is there any solution to the banking system? Or, Dr. Paul Craig Roberts, is it simply a matter of A, inflating the system with more fiat money, or B, letting the banks collapse? What do you think?
I don't think they'll be allowed to collapse, Max. There's actually been a great deal of credit. It's the Federal Reserve giving credit to the banks. I think that will continue, and that seems to be a preference in Europe, though the Germans seem to stand in the way of it. The problem, though, is it goes beyond the banking crisis. The real problem is all the offshoring of first world jobs, which meant that the United States economy simply had no increase in real income to drive the economy. And so that's where all the debt expansion began. It began because of the offshoring. So we mustn't ever forget that that's the real crisis. You see, recently, the U.S. Census data reported that between 2010 and 2009, U.S. median income fell by 2.3%. So when the median income is falling, there's nothing to drive the economy, and they no longer can use debt expansion because of the bank's balance sheets and because of the individual's balance sheet. So there's really no room for any credit other than the credit that the central banks give to the commercial, to the private banks.
Right. So this is really what we have is the end of a period in financial history and economic history that went back to really the Reagan-Thatcher era of neoliberalization, of deregulation. Now, you were with the Reagan administration, so you saw firsthand what the thinking was going back to those early 1980s, about deregulating and about transforming the economy from primarily manufacturing, engineering of practical stuff to an economy driven by financial engineering. So either, Dr. Paul Craig Roberts, either that theory was wrong, or B, as somewhere along the line over the past 25 years, somebody took a wrong turn. What are your thoughts?
Okay, well, let me correct you, Max, because the Reagan administration did not do any financial deregulation. The financial deregulation began with the Clinton administration when they repealed Glass-Steagall. We didn't advocate repeal of Glass-Steagall, and we certainly didn't advocate the kinds of financial concentration that produces banks too big to fail. All this came much later. And as far as giving up the manufacturing economy, that was nothing in the minds of anyone in the Reagan administration. All of that came after the collapse of the Soviet Union in 1991. It was the Soviet collapse that produced the end of history nonsense. And it caused China and India to open up their economies to the Western capital, to get on the winning side of history. And it was this change that produced the large excess supplies of labor in India and China for first world capital to exploit to produce the goods abroad that they sold back in their home markets. So all of this is post-Reagan. This was not the Reagan. In fact, no one knew during the Reagan years that the Soviet Union was going to collapse and that all of a sudden American technology and capital and business know-how would flow out into China and India. This was not in anybody's heads.
All right, let's focus on this Reagan administration for a second, because during the Reagan administration, of course, with Alan Greenspan, who picked up from Paul Volcker, there was under Volcker, which with along with Greenspan, and then transitioning into along with Reagan, I should say, there was a policy of a strong dollar and low taxes, which seemed to serve the economy well. These days, it seems like the policy initiatives are the opposite, that the policymakers are trying to get a weak dollar as a way to boost exports and relatively higher taxes. Is that a fair characterization?
I'm not sure that it is, Max. You see, the authorities in Washington don't really want a weak dollar because, in fact, it is weak. They don't want it recognized to be weak because they're worried about the slide. They're worried about the rise in the gold and silver price. And they're worried about losing the reserve currency role. You see, the United States is so heavily indebted. I mean, it's much worse even than Greece or Italy, where all the alleged crisis is. And so the United States is very happy about euro troubles that causes the euro to fall relative to the dollar. And so they don't really want a weak currency because it is weak. And what they are really frightened of is that the foreign governments, which hold vast quantities of dollars, as well as investors, start fleeing this currency and trying to move out of it. And of course, if the euro is even weaker, there's no real place to go. So the United States actually hopes that other currencies are weaker than the dollar in order to be able to continue in the role of reserve currency, because that lets the United States pay its bills simply by printing money. It doesn't have to earn from exports, foreign exchange, to pay for its oil or its manufactured goods. And so it wants to keep it that way. So I don't think they want a weak currency. I don't think they have any real idea that they have anything to export because manufacturing is moved offshore.
So you're saying that basically manufacturing is moved offshore. This has caused a debasement in tax revenue, of course. Unemployment's high. Wages are low. The GDP is weak. So the policy in Washington, of course, they want a stronger GDP. They want growth. They want output in the economy. But as you just said, the capacity for the economy to take on any more debt is zero. The economy can't take any more debt. The debt bubble that began under Reagan, they can't take on any more debt. So therefore, they have only one choice, and that is to let the dollar fall in value against major currencies. And that was the whole initiative behind quantitative easing. What would be quantitative easing if the idea wasn't to make the dollar weaker?
No, the quantitative easing was to finance the federal deficit. When all of a sudden the budget deficit jumps from $400 billion to $1,400 billion, who buys it? That's in excess of the trade surpluses that our trading partners have with us. It's in excess of the American saving rate. So who buys it? There was no one to finance it, except the Fed. So the Fed financed it by buying bonds. And that's what quantitative easing was. It was to pour vast amounts of Federal Reserve money into the American bond market in order to keep it from collapsing. And that's what quantitative easing is.
Right, but they're expanding the balance sheet of the government and the Federal Reserve Bank. They're not financing the debt in any sustainable way. They're simply undermining the overall integrity of the system, and they're debasing the dollar to go with it. But I want to just take a quick digression here, because the big story, it appears, going forward is the euro crisis really going across the channel and hitting the UK. Because in the UK, the debt to equity ratio for that country, the debt to GDP, is 1,000%, 600% of the banks are debt to GDP. Have you looked at the UK? Is this the next catastrophe on the global stage, Dr. Paul Craig Roberts?
I don't know, Max. Let me point out the big difference between the US and the UK and Europe. The US and the UK have central banks. They have their own currency. And so the central banks can always extend credit to the government. Now, that is not possible in the EU, because the EU central bank is not allowed under its charter to finance the deficits of the member states.
But is that a good thing or a bad thing for the euro? Is that a good thing or a bad thing for the euro, Dr. Paul Craig Roberts? The fact that the ECB cannot engage in quantitative easing, is that a positive or negative for the euro?
Let me finish this, Max. And each European member state, each EU member state, their central banks can't print euros. And so they cannot, the Central Bank of Greece cannot extend credit to Greece. And so that's why there's a crisis in Europe and not in England or the United States. The Italians, the Greeks, the Spanish cannot create money to finance the government. That's where the crisis comes from. Now, to answer your question, the Germans would say, well, we're scared to death of inflation. We don't want central banks monetizing debt. And that's why the EU central bank is prohibited from its charter from monetizing debt, because that was Germany's condition for joining the EU. But under the pressure of crisis, the EU central bank has agreed to make loans to the Greek government so that the Greek government could buy back its debt. So it's the same thing. So under the pressure of the crisis, the EU is moving away, the European Central Bank is moving away from its charter and seems to be pushed in the direction of monetizing debt as a solution to the pig's debt problems, sovereign debt problems.
Right. Now, when you talk about euro and you say that the ability of the ECB to expand the balance sheet is something that's really in its infancy, they haven't really leveraged that balance sheet much at all. And at the same time, you mentioned that, well, that's why they're in crisis and the U.S. and the U.K. are not in crisis. But let's define crisis here, because in the U.S., we just found out that 50% of the population is either at or below the poverty line. And in the UK, you've got the austerity measures are now creating a situation of negative real interest rates of 4.5%. That's a catastrophe in the UK. Purchasing power is collapsing. So by comparison, the euro looks great compared to the US and the UK, no?
Right. I agree with that. But you see, it's the hype. It's the hype about the European sovereign debt crisis.
That's right. It is the hype. That's why I'm selling you on the idea that the euro is in a lot better shape than the U.S. or the U.K. And I'm feeling good about this, because I feel that now I'm winning you over to my side. Because at the beginning of this, I felt that you were going down the path of, well, the euro is terrible, the pigs are terrible, and the euro is in terrible shape. But if you look at the policy of the ECB and you look at really what's going on in euros compared to the U.S. or the U.K., they're doing great compared to the U.S. and the U.K., which are truly falling apart in catastrophe zone, and the dollar is no longer the world reserve currency as it once was, and that percentage of world trade is dropping like a stone.
Well, I think that I said from the beginning that the situation with the U.S. debt was worse than Greece's. So I don't know why you thought I was had the opposite position. But look, real interest rates are negative in the United States as well.
That's right. They have negative interest rates in all the G20 nations, just about, but in particular in the UK. But I want to switch gears here for a second. You know, Gerald Celente, who we all love and adore, the seer of the Bronx, the man who got it right from the beginning, he's saying that the U.S. could soon enter a period of martial law. What do you think about that, Dr. Paul Craig Roberts?
He was talking about economic martial law, in which there's a bank holiday. And of course, he had the very unfortunate experience of having holdings in MF Global, and they simply stole his account, and they stole his gold futures, and simply robbed him. And nothing has been done about it. So one can see how we could certainly end up in a in an economic martial law. He's also concerned, as I am, about this amendment to the Defense Authorization Act, which is passed, which gives the United States military the power to arrest without evidence or any due process and hold indefinitely Americans in concentration camps. So that we now have a police state as well. And if you look at the two together, you can't really see any hopeful outcome in the year 2012 for Americans. Now, to get back to a little bit what we talked about earlier, in the last decade, from January of 2001 to January of this year, that's coming to a close now, the United States lost 5.5 million manufacturing jobs. And the result of losing these jobs is our great cities lost massive amounts of population. In the 10-year period, Detroit, Michigan lost 25% of its population. Flint, Michigan lost 22%. Other great cities like Cleveland, like Kansas City, were losing 17, 18, 19% of their population in a 10-year period. So that what you see happening in the United States is the appearance of ruins, and like Roman ruins in the 8th century. There are these ruins everywhere. If you go online and call up photographs of Detroit, you're seeing ruins. Well, what are the prospects of recovering from this? When you cannot generate income, and even though you can print money, you really can't generate a credit expansion because everyone is over-indebted already. So the prospect for 2012 has to be bleak. And at some point, the United States government won't be able to fudge the unemployment numbers anymore. They won't be able to fudge the inflation numbers. See, the way they get the positive GDP growth, which is very low, but the way they get it is they understate the inflation. If you look very carefully at the inflation rate, if you measure it correctly, the United States economy has been declining during practically the entire first decade of the 21st century. There was some real growth for a short period in 2004. That was it. And all the rest is a statistical mirage. The statistician John Williams has made this perfectly clear. So we're sinking in every way. While the debt mounts, the income base is shrinking. This is catastrophe. This really is an Armageddon.
Well, at the on the you're talking about the Rust Belt on the East Coast, Pittsburgh, Chicago, these areas, Detroit. Meanwhile, on the left bank, the left coast of America, the West Coast, companies like Zynga, Groupon, well, Groupon's in Chicago, but Facebook are going public through Silicon Valley and making thousands, tens of thousands of instant millionaires. And you've got instant billionaires. So isn't it just a creative destruction? Isn't this what you expect in a capitalist economy? Isn't this what you want in a capitalism, a creative destruction? You know, out with the old, in with the new. You know, cars made by expensive laborers out. Social networking is in. A lot of wealth being generated. What's the problem with that?
Well, you see, wealth isn't being generated because the national income is in decline. So what you mean is, look, you know, a lot of people got rich while Rome fell. There's nothing inconsistent with being able to get rich while a country declines, but that only happens to a few. And what we're talking, what we're faced with is decline. And so Facebook can't do anything about that. If you look, for example, at the income gains, if we look at the income gains, how they were split, say, between the top 1% and, say, the bottom 90% in the 1960s. Let's take the 1960s, because the 1960s, we had the Kennedy tax cuts, which were the equivalent of the Reagan tax cuts. The Reagan cuts were modeled on those of John F. Kennedy. At that time, the bottom 90% of the income distribution got about 64% of the income gains. The top 1% got 10%. Now, in the first decade of the 21st century, this reversed. The bottom 90% of the income distribution got 12% of the gains. And the top 1% got 62% of the gains. So we had a complete reversal in the distribution of the gains from income growth. So that tells you that obviously we now have a very bad distribution of income and wealth in the United States. And that's what all the measures of income inequality show, whether it's the CIA's measure, the Central Intelligence Agency's measure of the income inequality, or the OECD, or the UN. All of them show the United States has a terrible income distribution, by far the worst of all developed countries, and in many cases, worse than many third world countries. Even gangster countries have better income distributions than the United States. So with the financial concentration, and we see now this concentration of income and wealth. So it's become a very unequal society, which also makes it very difficult for the economy to progress.
Okay, so thanks for being on the edge, Dr. Paul Craig Roberts.
You're welcome, Max. It's always a pleasure to be with you.
All right, and that's going to do it for this edition of On the Edge with me, Max Keiser. If you'd like to send me an email, please do so at ontheedge@presstv.com. I want to thank my guest, Dr. Paul Craig Roberts. Until next time, this is Max Keiser saying bye, y'all.